Today on Secula, we'll look at the media frenzy following President Trump's address on the economy.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Secula. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host.
Welcome to Secula. I'm joined in studio by Jordan Secula today, and we have a packed show. We'll be joined by Chief Counsel of the ACLJ, Jay Secula, in just a couple segments, so you won't want to miss that. We'll be talking about that probable cause issue with the FBI and the raid on Mar-a-Lago, as well as we have Congressman Jared Moskowitz, who will be joining us later in the broadcast. That was rescheduled from earlier in the week when they had some votes to talk about the rise in anti-Semitism and all of the things that we've seen this week. But Jordan, we couldn't start the show without talking about this address last night.
Presidential address to the nation.
There was a flurry of news about it yesterday.
Theories about what may be in this
exactly.
Speech. I mean, it was clear the of course the White House was pushing out economic. You know, we're about to see. We've seen the inflation drop. I mean, under the Biden administration, we hit 9%. We're down to 2.7%. So the idea that the tariffs would somehow spike inflation, that was not true. So from the left, and again, a lot of the tariffs were being used as negotiating tactics. So while it did bring in some into the U.S. economy, I think President Trump said $18 billion, it was a way to, again, renegotiate U.S. Tariffs as well, what was happening to our goods in other countries. And it looks like that has been a positive that did not impact inflation. You look at the stock market numbers today, they didn't like have some, they were like, oh, the president's, we don't believe any of this. They were, I think it's up a little bit. So it's like, it didn't have an impact there in a negative way. And I think that's always where you want to look at. Did this have a negative impact? No. And so the left wasn't really sure how to characterize President Trump being more succinct. It was 18 minutes. I thought when I turned it on at 8, I'd probably have 45 minutes of watching, and you don't know other issues that might pop up along the way. But it was very centered and focused on the economy. And the big test is going to be, will the big, beautiful bill actually do what the president and the Republicans who passed that bill primarily promised that it would do, that people will start feeling that in 2026, which is key because it's a midterm election year.
That's right. And this isn't an abnormal thing for the president to do a year-end speech, a year-end address to talk about the accomplishments of the year.
Especially before people are too down the line to Christmas and then that Christmas to New Year's swing. So you could still get people are still in kind of a somewhat normal mode, I'd say.
And a lot of times it's used to kind of to test out what the themes of the State of the Union may be, which are early in the new year. But we want to hear from you. Did you watch it? What were your takeaways? Because I also want to talk about how the media reacted to this. But you call us at 1-800-684-3110.
My first question is, did you watch it? I mean, right. Really, are you tuning into these now the way that America used to tune in? Or do you see so much of the president because he makes himself available? He makes his views very clear on a daily basis through various different platforms, and so does his team. So it still, to me, is important to watch because you really, until the speech begins, you never know if there's going to be something new, something added. There was speculation about war. I think that again, that's not something they would just throw in there without any kind of precursor. And I think what's happening in Venezuela that you're seeing is that something we don't actually talk about enough, and I was talking about with our team, is that I've been talking to a lot of people who do a lot of business in the Caribbean and also the ports there. And China has really been building up. They have a bigger presence than we do in the Caribbean when it comes to their both economic, I put that in quotes, because they also build ports that their military can utilize. So shaking up the Caribbean waters and a U.S. presence there that is strong and also preventing more fentanyl from getting into America and killing Americans, it's kind of a two-part goal, right? I mean, you are preventing the drugs, but you're also telling China that you don't have, we're not going to allow you to continue to have dominance over our backyard in the Caribbean.
And once again, we do want to remind people, we are celebrating Raise Your Voice Week, yes, where we celebrate the work of the ACLJ, fighting for your First Amendment rights, your freedom of speech, your freedom of religion. And right now, all donations are doubled as we move forward with this Raise Your Voice Week. ACLJ.org/voice to raise your voice along with us. Welcome back to Seculo, and I want to remind you our phone lines are open if you want to speak about this at 1-800-684-3110. Did you watch the speech? What was your reaction to it? But I do want to give some reaction to it here, Jordan, as we kind of go through this. It was a different tone than we'd heard in kind of a presidential address from the president in that format. For almost had more of a rally style without an audience.
Right.
But here are some of the headlines I picked. I just picked a few just because I thought you'd enjoy them. Top Democrats rip Trump address, untethered from reality and truth. Then MS Now had the top 10 most brazen lies from Trump's year-end primetime address. In 18 minutes, they found the top 10. I mean, that's... It's kind of should cover the whole speech at that point. I think there weren't more than 10 points he made if you're going to try to do that. But then we had the president. This is from CNN. The president fixated on Joe Biden in a rushed speech that didn't sell a compelling economic message. I also want to bring this up.
That's my first point. Usually the media, one, that's because they want him to speak for an hour and a half. Why? Their ratings go up because people would rather watch him than most of their hosts. And so usually they're talking about, oh, it's long-winded, it's all over the place. So when it's actually direct, I do think he gave it in like a very tough tone. But when it's direct and to the point, it's like, oh, what's this? We only got 18 minutes. Now we got to rush to cover now our full show. We didn't just get to rely on President Trump covering one and a half of our news broadcast shows that aren't doing so well at night. And so I think that's point one. Point two, the idea that it's lies. You can't lie about inflation. So inflation going down from 9 to 2.7%. You can't lie about saying that military bonuses are going out because of the tariffs of $1,776. Again, going to that 250th anniversary of the United States. And then a lot of this is talking about, and this is where you have to be more speculative because we've got the big, beautiful bill going now into full effect into 2026. That is when... ordinary citizens, not just government agencies, but the people are supposed to get the positive effects. You can't say that's not true until you've allowed it to go into effect. So you allow it to go into effect, and then you can judge it from there. I think what's happening is prejudging and saying, you know, this can't be true and that can't be true. That's not completely accurate. And if that is correct, it could balance the healthcare issue. Because if people have more money and if their mortgage rates do go down, the interest rates there go down, especially on mortgages, then if you don't have that extra COVID era by Obamacare funding, well, if you're paying a lot less for your home in a year or this upcoming year, you're able to then cover what may be for some people. You know, some of these costs I was hearing, you know, it's $50 more a month, $100 more a month. And on the higher end earners, $1,000 more a month. Well, if their mortgage payment goes down by a percentage point or two, that should be able to balance out.
That's right. And once again, I thought it was comical.
Net bonus.
Because CNN called it in one article a speech about nothing.
Right. But they have 10.
But then they also fact checked a speech about nothing. What's there to fact check if it was indeed about nothing?
Yeah, I mean, their own headlines. We always go to this. Their own headlines contradict themselves. They have fact checkers. Saying that there's all these lies, and then their bigger headline is it was a nothing speech. Well, if it was a nothing speech, why do you have fact checkers taking it, and why is it covering all of your homepage? And I think what it was they saw 18 minutes. It was 18 minutes. It was not what they were expecting. It wasn't me. It wasn't going off teleprompter. It wasn't going off message. It stuck to the economy. And I think what they wanted was more Venezuela talk and more talk like that. And like, as I want to remind people, and I don't think the administration is not trying to play this with China as directly as I can say, but we know that China, under the Biden administration, under the Obama administration as well, and you know, Trump had only 4 years the first time, so you can only get so much out when you're talking about the military and the other things we needed to deal with. They were starting to dominate the Caribbean. That is not good for the United States of America. That's our backyard. So when you start taking out these drug vessels and saying, we're going to stop this fentanyl and this cartel government in Venezuela from getting to our borders. That also makes the Caribbean a little bit less of a free for all for the Chinese to not only build for their economic ports, but when they build ports, their economic / military, that always comes together. And so we need that presence in the Caribbean to let them know that our warships are going to be there.
Well, and Jordan, I think it was interesting because that became kind of a theme before the speech was given. Yeah. Meanwhile, Caroline Leavitt, as well as Scott Bessent, had both, during the day yesterday, previewed what was coming. They said this is about the agenda for affordability. President Trump mentioned that they will be unveiling a plan for affordable housing next year. So that was what the White House and the Treasury Secretary were telling us was coming at 9 p.m. Then all of a sudden, you have people like Tucker Carlson, who decided to be a warmonger and say on both News Nation or Newsmax, I believe, as well as putting it out on Twitter, that tonight the president is going to announce that we are going to war with Venezuela. That's what he's announcing at 9 p.m. And that spread like wildfire. It probably helped the ratings to some degree, sure, because then people are like, oh my goodness, the president's going to announce we're taking military action against Venezuela. But it wasn't true. There wasn't even a mention of that. Right. But in reality, we talked with Secretary Mike Pompeo last week about when they seized that oil vessel. And these are ships that are already sanctioned once again.
So if you have the ability to seize them, you do.
If you're going to do sanctions with no enforcement of those sanctions, if they are flying in the face of your sanctions,
just think it's a joke.
What's the point? Something that should have been done probably under the Biden administration when this vessel was listed as a sanctioned vessel.
Right.
So we have these things that are going on. It doesn't necessarily mean that the war drums are beating. It means that the administration is actually putting their money where their mouth is and saying, if we're going to sanction these vessels, we're going to seize them. We're going to put a blockade on oil that the Iranians, the Chinese, and the Venezuelans all use this kind of ghost fleet, they say, to transport their oil to get around sanctions. We're going to put a stop to that. It's in our own backyard. This is national security. That doesn't necessarily mean you're going to see airstrikes on the presidential palace in Caracas, Venezuela. But, Jordan, I do think that we should play this because this is something Logan and I have talked about recently. You and I have talked about it as well, where the president, there is one caution that needs to happen here. This is the end of the first year. I think we should play Bite 4 because if I were to critique some of the speech last night, would be,
we'll be fair and honest,
it is still very heavy on Biden. And let's play this and then we can commentate, because as we come to the end of this year, we believe that you at some point have to move on.
Midterm voters are not going to be voting on President Biden's record. This was the year that you can utilize to say, this is the mess I inherit. So now I've got to correct all of Biden's wrongs. So I've been spending the entire year doing that. Now you're going to see the pluses of that to the people. And that's what that's what will have to be delivered through the big, beautiful bill and other actions taken.
And let's go ahead and play Bite 4. Definitely. This is from the president last night. This is just kind of a sampling of how he weaved in the previous administration and where we are now. Bite 4.
Here at home, we're bringing our economy back from the brink of ruin. The last administration and their allies in Congress looted our treasury for trillions of dollars, driving up prices and everything at levels never seen before. I am bringing those high prices down and bringing them down very fast. Let's look at the facts. Under the Biden administration, car prices rose 22% and in many states, 30% or more. Gasoline rose 30 to 50%. Hotel rates rose 37%. Airfares rose 31%. Now under our leadership, they are all coming down and coming down fast.
So once again, he is showcasing economic numbers, data that helps his cause, but is still rooted very much in that contrast with Biden.
Yes.
That's okay. And I think it's fine now, for now.
For the first year, you're allowed to correct the wrongs that the reason why you were elected is that people did not want Biden or the Harris agenda to continue. They did not believe that was the right path. So you have to, and they believed that they were causing trouble and problems. So you have to correct the problems. And when you correct the problems, the correction is the first part. And then the benefit of the correction is the second part. And the American people, if those numbers stay low on inflation, if mortgage interest rates come down, it can balance out some of that Obamacare subsidies during COVID that are not going to be extended. It does not look like that'd be voted down. They're not even having a vote on that in the House, and because they could not agree on even having a vote that likely would have failed, but couldn't even get there. But if mortgage rates come down and you're talking about kind of the people, not at the lowest end, who are not going to be paying the biggest increases. For them, I mean, it can be $25 and $50 a month. I'm not saying that's nothing, but for full health care coverage, it's pretty good. And that happens over time. That's just normal. That is normal inflation when it comes to a program that's now been in place for over a decade. When you're looking at then what comes next for the American people and for the middle class, that's the key. And does the big, beautiful bill deliver? And so that's what the voters will be judging President Trump on, and the Republicans running for re-election trying to maintain control, which is historically very difficult, of the House and the Senate. We want you to stand with us, by the way, raising your voice in this effort. You know, we've got the movie that we're putting together, but this is also a week that we want to focus on freedom of speech and the defense of that speech, whether it's political speech, religious speech, speech on life, speech against anti-Semitism. Support our work. Donate today, ACLJ.org.
Welcome back to Seculo. I'm Will Haynes, Jordan Seculo in studio with me, and joining us now is Chief Counsel of the ACLJ, Jay Seculo. And we are going to talk about that issue that Logan and I talked about yesterday, which is this probable cause issue with the search warrant on Mar-a-Lago. And what was released from the FBI to Senator Grassley was unclassified, declassified emails between the DOJ and the FBI discussing the issues surrounding a search warrant, which led to the raid on Mar-a-Lago. And what we find repeatedly throughout these emails that started in June of 2022 and went all the way until 4 days before the actual raid itself, was an FBI in the Washington field office that was against executing a search warrant on Mar-a-Lago. They did not believe they had probable cause to get the search warrant on Mar-a-Lago. They were frustrated with the DOJ, which had told them things like, "I frankly don't give a blank about the optics in a search warrant executed on Mar-a-Lago." And this was all memorialized in memos, in emails, as the DOJ continued to push forward with a raid on Mar-a-Lago. We see that the FBI was concerned about this. And so I wanted to turn to our Chief Counsel, Jay Sekulow, now and get your thoughts on this. When you saw this news came out about the FBI's response to it, what was your first impression on this?
Well, the FBI agents that raised the concern about the lack of probable cause were correct. And the Department of Justice response with the expletive of "I don't care, you know, blank, how the atmospherics look," also showed you the callous indifference they had, not only to the former president, who's now again president of the United States, but also to the process itself. So I think this is not surprising, but I do really believe at the end of the day that there will be people held accountable. I know that's the great frustration. But we're seeing that already. There's hearings. There's oversight hearings. We're being very aggressive at the ACLJ in our government accountability project, going after these issues. So I'm optimistic that those responsible will be held liable. Does it take time? You bet. But I'm optimistic that at least the information's coming out and there'll be action taken on it.
Yeah, I mean, they say, you know, the FBI, they didn't believe it had probable cause. I mean, that's huge right there. But they also said this is not the actual best way to retrieve documents. This is for the optics. That's what it's all about. It is for the raid, the criminalization of the former president at the time, when in fact, usually when these kind of situations come up and such shortly after someone leaves office, if the FBI really just wants to go back to retrieve documents to make sure they're in the right place, they would do so in a much more calm way, speaking with the former president's team and go in there and get the files they need. They wouldn't do a raid with guns out. Dad.
Remember what they were trying to do here, and this is important. They were trying to disqualify President Trump from running again. So you had it in two contexts. You had all these indictments that came down, authorized by Merrick Garland, known by Joe Biden, who was president, while President Trump was running for re-election. And at the same time, and this is, I think, equally important, they were already planning to try to get him removed from the ballots of various states so he wouldn't get the nomination if, in fact, which he was, the Republicans' nominee for president. We know that firsthand because we represented the Republican Party of Colorado at the Supreme Court of the United States on that very issue.
So one of the ways that we talked about this yesterday, Logan and I, was when you think about the context of the work the ACLJ was doing at the same time as this going on, we were defending whistleblowers that the Biden administration, the FBI at the time, had put in a sort of professional purgatory where they could not get a new job. Their security clearance was suspended. All because they were trying to speak out against weaponization and abuses they saw going on within the Department of Justice and the FBI at the time. We see here that there were individuals within the FBI that were concerned and did not believe they had the proper steps to move forward. We also are talking about this project that we're working on, the chilling effect. And I think it ties in directly because when the federal government uses their heavy hand against whistleblowers, against Christians, against conservatives, what does it have on that? It has a chilling effect. It causes people to not want to speak out. And that's exactly what we're fighting here for at the end of the year, is to push back, to protect the First Amendment, to protect whistleblowers. And I think it's the perfect time to bring up something like this because it's what we fight for every day here.
Well, we fight for it and we got justice. Remember, we represented whistleblowers that have now been made whole because of our litigation. And so, look, we get results. But, we've got this campaign going on. We're at the last 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks, of the end of the year. These are the biggest 2 weeks for the American Center for Law and Justice. And I want to ask everybody that's listening to this broadcast right now, we've talked about the victories that we've had at the Supreme Court, representing the whistleblowers, going after government abuse, protecting free speech. Here's the issue. Will you stand with us in this matching challenge right now as we move this forward? And I will tell you, the response over the last 3 days has been great. We want to continue this momentum into the end of the year. If you have not donated, we encourage you to do so today. Your one-time gift will be matched. If you become an ACLJ champion, you become part of that match. So there's multiple ways you could stand with us. I encourage everybody that's listening to this broadcast right now, if you appreciate the work of the broadcast that's going on, we don't put things, as Logan says, behind paywalls. If you appreciate the legal work that we're doing, if you appreciate the government affairs work that we're doing, then stand with us right now as we stand for freedom of speech and liberty and protect your right to speak your mind.
That's right. Thank you so much for joining us today. And Jordan, we're going to get into this some more. We've got some other topics as well, as Congressman Moskowitz will be joining us in the back half. But that message there at the end, this is the final 2 weeks of the year as we really build towards what we can do in 2026 with all this momentum. It's such an important time to stand with the ACLJ at ACLJ.org.
That's right. I mean, it's a critical time for the legal work. We'll be filing more at the Supreme Court before the end of the year. So we'll get into that even maybe next week before we hit the end of the year. And then as well, we're preparing for, this is what sets us up for the resources that are going to be available to kick off 2026. And so that's very key for us, the American Center for Law and Justice. And why? If you go to aclj.org/voice in this Raise Your Voice Week, and we put together this this new film as well about all the different kinds of speech that we are working to defend, from political speech to religious speech to live speech to speech on Israel. I mean, the list goes on and on, because at the heart of it, we believe that the more speech that you allow, that our messages win out. It's when you start, trying to say, well, if we could censor the other side, and we could, then maybe we'll take some censorship too. No, that's not how we want this to work. We believe that more speech, more free speech, leads to positive outcomes for the for all of us and the American people. And that's such a core part of what the ACLJ does. Across the board of all those different kinds of speech that I just went through. So you support our work, you double the impact of your donation through going to aclj.org/voice. Donate today, your donation will be doubled. And again, this is how we prepare and know how we can kick off 2026, which is also a midterm election year. Go to aclj.org/voice now, donate today.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now, more than ever. This is Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo. This is the second half hour kicking off now. If you missed that segment that we just had with Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow, I encourage you, go back and listen to it later on today. Keep watching now. Hit the thumbs up. Subscribe to the channel if you are not already subscribed on YouTube or Rumble. But it was very important to hear, talking about the failures of the DOJ in that remarkable, crazy search warrant that they executed on Mar-a-Lago, and how it applies even today. But Jordan, I did want to go to a caller real quick here in this short segment, because we were talking about the Venezuela topic with the blockade and the pressure that the president is putting on Venezuela. And you were bringing up how influential China has become in the Caribbean. And it isn't something that's talked about a lot.
No, and it's something that even if you go on vacation to some of those nations, you might not notice because you're not going to the economic zones or the port zones. That's not where you typically are if you're on vacation. And some of these are Caribbean countries that don't have as big of necessarily, some are, the ones that you would normally go to. The other are not necessarily ones that have as big of a tourism reliance on their economy.
But let's go to Bill calling from Wyoming on line two, watching on ACLJ.org. Bill, you're on Sekulow.
Hi. First of all, let me start out by saying that I found some extra money, so I'm sending it. You should be getting a Monday for your donations week. Anyway, I got upset when I heard about what you were talking about with China, because all what I hear from the mainstream media is that, yes, there's a few Chinese boats out there just to do some business with those countries. And why is America sending all this military out to blow up innocent citizens in boats, which are actually delivering drugs? And we shouldn't be having our military presence in there. That really upsets me.
Yes, I mean, I think that this is, again, it doesn't get enough attention, and it may not be obvious to that, even with tourism. So you could be going to some of these places and not see that presence or not notice what that presence is. So you've got this, most of this initiative is about ports to get, one, cheap Chinese goods into these countries, but also then to export raw materials out of those countries to China. And China doesn't play by the same economic rules that we do in the United States, though President Trump has relaxed some of those restrictions so that our businesses can be competitive because of how the Chinese try to do business. When they build ports, they are not just building ports for that, the economic side, though. They are building warm water military ports. So you've got military vessels and the economic side, so both. And then what are the Caribbean nations getting in return? Chinese telecom for basically free. So they're building the infrastructure out there, building the ports, but they're in control of them. It's Chinese controlled ports. It's not the ports that are controlled by the nations that have allowed those in so far. Obviously Cuba's one that may not be as surprising to others. Trinidad, Tobago. You've got the infrastructure ties in the Bahamas going right now. Dominican Republic, Haiti as well. Saint Lucia. I mean, basically the entire Caribbean has got something going on with China. The second part of this that I think is key is that by putting a U.S. presence there, and some of this with Venezuela, I think, accomplishes that, is to say, no, we are not just letting you have open control of waterways and ports so close to home, so close to the United States of America, without knowing that, hey, we're here too. And if we've got to take military action against enemies, against drugs that kill Americans, we're going to do that. And so your vessels need to be on notice. This is not the open waters that it may have been under the Biden administration.
That's right. And if you're curious more about that,
when they put Huawei in,
right?
They have full access to everything. So then that helps their intel services.
But it's called the Belt and Road Initiative that China has been doing. Yes. You may have heard that in the context of what they were doing the same thing in Africa, around the world.
They've done advanced. I've talked to people that own businesses in the Caribbean. Offshore businesses, it also have business in the United States. The Chinese presence is huge. It is huge.
And that's right. And as well as a victory for Secretary of State Marco Rubio early was getting Panama to leave the Belt and Road Initiative. Right. So that is where a lot of this comes from. But folks, next segment, we're joined by Congressman Jared Moskowitz to talk about the rise in anti-Semitism. But donate today at ACLJ.org. Welcome back to Seculo. We are joined in this segment by Congressman Jared Moskowitz from Florida's 23rd District. And Jordan, wanted to hand it over to you as we can get this conversation started.
Jared, thanks for joining us. Congressman Moskowitz, I've known Jared since before he was a congressman. We were in college together and fraternity brothers. But he's someone that is on the other side of the aisle that we work with on a lot of issues. It's not just the issue of anti-Semitism, but it's important to both of us and our families. And Congressman Moskowitz, thank you for joining us. I know it's a busy week, you know, wrapping up in Washington, D.C. But when we saw the attacks in Australia after massive protests against Israel around the world, including in Australia, getting a warning from Israel saying we think the anti-Semitism is getting out of control with these protests, and even some comments we've seen from leaders, not just on the left, and you've been very vocal about that, saying that on the left, you know, there's been kind of this infection, and on the right, we're starting to see an infection begin, and that we have some time to combat that, but not a lot of time. So I wanted to spend some time to actually talk about that with you, is for us on the right, who see now this kind of rise in anti-Israel, and sometimes just anti-straight-up anti-Jewish speech by some of the most popular names, sometimes elected, sometimes commentators. How do you think it should be combated?
Well, I mean, listen, it needs to be taken seriously as a threat on day one. And that was the difference of having hindsight, which is, you know, when this started going on in the Democratic Party, when the campus protests first started, where people were holding signs that said, go back to Poland, which clearly has nothing to do with Israeli policy, you know, the Democratic Party was really slow to say anything. The Biden administration was slow. Many Democratic members who are the first ones to jump out of their seat on any cause were slow to respond. When we saw Jewish students being surrounded on campus wearing a Jewish star, being prevented from going to class, nobody knew what that student's position was on Netanyahu. They were being picked on because they were Jewish. So when people said, look, you can be anti-Zionist without being anti-Semitic, I would say you could, theoretically. These people are just not. And when you're chanting, globalize the Intifada, okay, and from the river to the sea, which means the elimination of Israel, it's hard to see those things as not being anti-Semitic.
Listen, I saw a remark this week. It was in, you know, it was on X, and so it's not always the most carefully worded place, but it was from Vice President Vance, and who was, I think, trying to say the right thing, which is that you can disagree with policies of Israel, which, by the way, inside Israel, there's a lot of political disagreement. I mean, people need to probably learn more about that, because it's like here in the United States. These are democratically elected, multi-party system with coalitions that we couldn't even imagine trying to put together inside the United States with people. And you certainly don't have to agree with every policy or action or elected official of Israel. That doesn't make you an anti-Semite. But if you are just flatly anti-Israel, it doesn't matter what the policies are. It doesn't matter the issues. And you don't see any positive benefit with the U.S. relationship. To me, if it's a country that is 90% Jewish, built because of the because of the Holocaust, and a country with that other 10%, by the way, of religious minorities and others who are not only protected to practice their faiths or lack of faith, they are encouraged to be part of the politics, encouraged to be part of the military and security. And of course, that message doesn't get out as clearly. I don't think you can make a statement, and it did kind of read like that from the vice president, of you can be anti-Israel and not be anti-Semitic. I don't think that statement is way too broad. I just don't think that's true.
Yeah, and listen, you know, the vice president and other people on the right are going to have to deal with the growing influence of Tucker and the growing influence of Nick Fuentes and Candace Owens and all these other grifters, some of which are being paid. So long as we allow China and other foreign adversaries to be the most influential voice with our kids, whether that's on TikTok or other platforms, manipulating the algorithms, okay, everything else we do is whack-a-mole. We have to understand what's happening on the social media space. We cannot be defeated militarily, the United States, but what you can do if you're a foreign adversary is you can get people foaming out the mouth with anger. You can create such division. You can create your institutions not being able to function. And using an old playbook, which is just blame the Jews. And you see it growing on the right. And look, you see it growing among white men who for the last, you know, 5 years have been told they're totally worthless. And then with AI growing, you know, getting stronger, their concerns about, you know, the economic future, it sounds a lot like what happened in Europe. When there's bad, hard economic times, you know, you create a boogeyman. But this is all being fueled by our foreign adversaries, and we're letting it happen. We're falling right into the trap. And so, look, Jews are never going back to the attic. I'm not going back to the attic. I'm not hiding from anyone. Okay. And so, this is a fight that we have to talk boldly, loudly. We cannot hide. We cannot cower. We cannot think this is just going to go away or this is just a phase. This is a virus. It is spreading rapidly. It's still on the rise. It's metastasized on my side of the aisle, and on the Republicans who for years have been telling me, oh, we, you know, we'll never see anything like this on our side. Well, welcome to the dance, because you know now's the time to be vocal on this and to not pretend like it's not an issue. You pretend it's not an issue, one day you're going to wake up and it's going to have consumed you, and it's going to be too late.
Well, and Congressman, the horrific attack that we saw on the first night of Hanukkah in Australia just earlier this week, we should not forget that the violence against Jews is not just in Australia or in the Middle East, that we had diplomats that were murdered, assassinated on the streets of Washington, D.C. in the very recent past. That this type of violence is not exclusive to other parts of the world, that unfortunately, that the fear that the students had on campuses where the slogans and the globalize the intifada were being chanted in their face and they weren't allowed to go to their classrooms to learn, the fear is rooted in the fact that that violence is happening here in the United States as well. So it can't be let to continue to fester and has to be stamped out. And I wanted to get just kind of your thoughts on that as we reflect on what happened this very week in Australia.
Well, obviously what we saw in Australia is a horrific terrorist attack, but not unexpected, not unpredictable. You know, the warning signs were there. What happened in D.C., you saw people, after those folks were gunned down, you saw people celebrating, saying it was justified. And look, when you start calling people genocide supporters, when you start calling people they're the cause for all of these other problems, they killed Charlie Kirk, or they're the problems for the economic issues, when you start dehumanizing someone, then, you know, it's easier for people to be like, yeah, yeah, go kill them. It's justified. Okay? And this is not new. This is exactly what happened in the lead up to the Holocaust. It was the dehumanization of the Jewish people. I often say that if Hitler had TikTok and X at his disposal, I don't know that the Jews would have survived. And so, look, obviously we have to balance free speech. But I don't know that free speech extends to algorithms blasting out Nazi propaganda and Jewish hate all over the globe to weaponize children's brains who are addicted to their devices to sell this propaganda to our youth.
Well, and I know that there are bipartisan efforts. We've been working on it. You've been working on it, Congressman Moskowitz. Is there hope that you have that there could be bipartisan efforts to start combating protecting our children here in the United States? It seems like that should be something we can all agree on. A lot of us have young kids. They've got these devices. We don't want them and their brains being warped by the Chinese, who we know will use anything to sow discontent in the West. And it's one that's easy and they can point to right now is, well, we've got anti-Semitism on the left. We've got anti-Semitism on the right. Let's just keep pushing that out. And that'll really cause trouble for the United States.
By the way, it's all by design. It's not by accident.
Right.
And so, look, I do think there are people on the Hill that want to do that. Unfortunately, here in Washington, the only way you can get Congress to act nowadays is things have to get worse before it gets the attention. And that's
it's worse. Do you think this would be enough? Like, how many mass killings of Jews do we have to see that follow mass protest in support of, you know, with the protests with the slogans, like you said, from the river to the sea, or calling for the abolishment of Israel, saying that you can be anti-Israel and not anti-Semitic, and it's scratching your head. No, you can't. That really doesn't work. You can certainly debate policies, but you can't just say this people group should not exist and their country should be removed. That we've gotten to that point. I mean, if it has to really get worse, that's a scary place, Congressman Moskowitz.
I agree. And this is what Jewish parents fear around the country.
Yeah. I don't want our lighting of the menorah at my home, which we do with our kids, celebrating both holidays, to be an act of defiance. But like this year, it felt like that. And it certainly felt like that early in the Hanukkah season. Happy Hanukkah to you and your family as you celebrate, Congressman Moskowitz. And Jared, thank you for being brave, joining us, crossing the aisle, coming on board to talk, because I think you have a lot of insight to give into what we need to be doing on the right to so that we don't get to where we saw the left go. And so I appreciate him taking that time during a very busy time in Washington, D.C., in this kind of final legislative week. And folks, support our work. And you see, we work across the aisle. I think sometimes people see it's, oh, you guys are super partisan. We will work across the aisle for good. ACLJ.org. Donate today.
Welcome back to Seculo, and thank you to Representative Moskowitz and his team for having him on during this very busy week.
There's been a lot of votes going on. Because of, you know, to do the media side of this, we work together. We talk a lot about working across the aisle on issues that we agree on that are some of the kind of the big issues, the big things that Americans should agree on, that we protecting our kids. He was a state representative in Florida for the Parkland School District, and with a Republican majority House, a very strong Republican majority House and Senate in Florida with a Republican governor, was able to pass through some gun reform there because of access to weapons from some of these. And it was able to pass through with, Republican-led. That led to Governor DeSantis, and that's when you start seeing Jared join our broadcast, actually during the COVID crisis.
Right.
He was brought on as the emergency management director for Florida by a Republican governor who had seen his work also in the state legislature, now in Washington, D.C. He's not afraid to talk about what's happened on the left, and he's can help us, like I asked, in combating it on the right, about not letting the infection spread. It could start with the Nick Fuenteses and the Tucker Carlsons and Candace Owens. But then when you start, if the vice president's kind of starting to echo it a little bit, or it's confusing to people if you read what, and better not to just write it out on X. If you want to explain your position on that, maybe say it in words, and maybe don't do it 2 days after, 15 Jews are gunned down celebrating Hanukkah on the beach in Australia. I think all of that, we've got to learn. This is we are living in a dangerous time, and I really hope and pray that it doesn't take what Congressman Moskowitz said, that it has to get worse for bipartisan action to get better. I think it's gotten bad enough. And on the right, this is a virus that could spread quickly amongst young people, because of what they're able to access and what they're getting fed online, propaganda, which most of it is actually not coming out of the Middle East, but utilized by China and by intention. And so whether we're talking about the Caribbean, whether we're talking about Israel, there are bigger countries at stake here who just want to destabilize the United States political system and our country. They don't want the U.S. to be the shining city on the hill.
Well, and I think
especially as we celebrate our 250th anniversary.
Exactly. And as we look at also what we're talking about, Raise Your Voice
Week. Free speech does work.
Exactly. And that's the point.
See, free speech doesn't work. But what they're doing is like what Congress Moskowitz was. They are pre-programming propaganda. That's not free speech. That's a foreign nation pre-programming propaganda to young people and other foreign nations paying some of these people to put out this propaganda. And listen, we've done work in countries outside of Israel in the Middle East when we've needed help for situations in Iran for a Christian pastor or for a family if in the Palestinian territories. I've been in worked in the West Bank because of that, and worked with Israel because of that. So you have to be able to do that. And those stories just aren't widespread enough in the mainstream world that when you're so many of those attackers on October 7th, just as a reminder to people, were known to the people, especially in the kibbutz attacks, because they were employed. They worked on those kibbutzes. That was their a place that they came every day to work. And you see how quickly, because of the radicalization, that everything can seem okay, and those are the same people that are killing your kids.
Well, and as I do want to take this call before we end the broadcast, but I do want to say, as we talk about Raise Your Voice Week,
this is part of
raising voices like Congressman Moskowitz, or even you think of
censorship
as well.
Being down on the platforms. We keep getting back to that. If you notice what he said, what we've been talking about this week, I've been talking about this week, when the censorship is down on the platforms, it's up to us to utilize, and for you to utilize your voice there, because you don't have to fear being banned. You don't have to fear, and if you think that something is getting flagged, that we contact us because we can handle that. So utilizing your voices on social media and standing up to this before you wake up and realize this next generation holds views that you find completely abhorrent, but now they're the ones who are starting to run for office and be in charge.
All right, let's go to Ray calling in Pennsylvania. He's calling to talk about the president's speech last night. Ray,
yep.
You're on Seculo.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I did see the speech last night, and I found Donald Trump to be succinct in his speech to the American people. People who are angry, but they need to realize that what took 4 years to break by the Democratic team cannot be fixed in 5 days, 5 weeks, or 5 months. But the economy is trending in the correct direction.
And that's what you want to continue. And that is why 2026 is going to be important with midterm elections, because you could hear with Congress Moskowitz, with the kind of the partisanship on the Hill and then the infighting within both parties, if we end up with just impeachments and investigations and a lot of distractions that probably don't lead to actual convictions of anything, you're not going to get the full benefit of any of this change in policy and redirection in policy and refocusing in policy. And if we can, again, it will be a test. 2026, the big beautiful bill needs to start having that impact positively for the American people. If it does, you're going into a midterm election with a hope that you can beat historic cycles and keep control of the House of the Senate, is a way to, I think, stay away from the distractions, start working more bipartisanship on some issues, because you're not going to have these divisive issues like impeachment that come up if Republicans keep the House or in the Senate, especially. And you can actually get more legislation done that can benefit the American people.
Well, and to Ray's point there as well, yes, it does take a while to fix that. But that's where we were also cautioning. If you go into 2026 making it about Biden, like, people understand the concept.
They're not voting on that.
Right. They understand the concept. They know what was bad that was done. So move on to showcasing the data. And that's why I think the Treasury Secretary is very effective advocate and kind of spokesperson on the economic data, because Scott Bessent is incredibly smart and incredibly gifted at explaining numbers. And they have him on CNN. They have him on MS Now. And he goes on, is able to do that well. That if you make it all about Biden in this year, you are guaranteeing a loss in the House. And you know what's happening in 12 months and 2 weeks at this point? Articles of impeachment are filed in the House of Representatives.
Yep.
They're already writing them. That is their goal, is to make him the thrice impeached president.
Which means you can only do what you can via executive order, and the nation's attention kind of gets distracted. And we've been through it. We know. I mean, trust us when we say that. Distraction is probably not a strong enough word. So it's a time to utilize your voice as we go into the end of the year and in the beginning of 2026. And that's why this week has been a week devoted to, and will be a week devoted to, raising your voice here via the ACLJ and our campaign at aclj.org/voice, where you can double the impact of your donation. That's aclj.org/voice. It is important that you stand with us, that you stand with the idea of free speech, and that you utilize your free speech. And then when you feel that your free speech is being trampled on or has been wronged legally, just contact us at aclj.org/help. Doesn't cost you a thing. You will be contacted by an ACLJ attorney. Usually we'll need more information. And if we're able to assist you in correcting that wrong or pointing us in the direction of where the wrong is, we will do just that. Because that is first and foremost, when you talk about speech, it means speech on your faith, speech on your politics, speech on your ideas of life, speech on anti-Semitism in Israel, foreign policy. All of that is encompassed in that idea of freedom of speech, and we must defend it, and raise our voices and utilize it. Donate today at aclj.org/voice and double your donation.